This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, unless something goes wrong. We had a little bit of excitement last night. I typically check to see and make sure the jobs all ran, which doesn't take me very long. I mean, it's just a matter of powering up the computer, logging in, going, yep, okay, that looks good. So I did that last night, as is my habit. And I looked and went, nope, that's not good. Because I had no emails from the processes that were supposed to be ready. And I was like, ooh, ooh, ooh. So I started looking around, sent myself a test email just to make sure that the email handlers weren't down and the email handlers were up. And then I went over to check some status reports and they were all red, which means that things are not balanced. So at that point, I called my buddy, who is another one of the programmers up there, my major client, and I said, you know, we did not get any emails from the overnight process. So he went out and checked the scheduler and to see if things were running. By that time, I had pulled up what we call the operations log, and sure enough, stuff was running. We had just gotten started 3 hours late, and another portion had gotten started 2 hours late. So we were looking at it going, what is going on? And so we kind of dinked around with it for a while, and we said, well, stuff's running, so we might as well just let it go. And I told my buddy, I said, listen, I'll check it first thing in the morning when I get up, and we'll see where we're at, and then we'll go from there. I apologize. It has been a long week. It's been a good week. We've got a lot of good things done, but it has been a long week. And my voice is a little tired today. I've been talking today, but in addition to that, I woke up with a little tickle in the back of my throat. Those stinking viruses are trying to get in touch with me. And I'm just thinking they won't. I don't know what they'll do, but I'm thinking, you know, wish there was just a way you could tell your body, that's it, let's go, troops. Do it, troops. Go for it. You know, that your antibodies and stuff would just rally to the cause. Lock down those viruses before they can destroy more cells. Were we talking about that last? No, week before last. Anyways, fascinating stuff, that virus stuff. That is fascinating, fascinating stuff. Come on, buddy. You can do it. Produce those antibodies. Let's get this thing under control. Anyways, I got up this morning and checked and looked like everything had ran, except we had one piece that was out of balance. I was like, what? It was one of those pieces that shouldn't even have been related to anything. You know, it was like, what? How did that happen? So I did some checking around. I was like, oh, are you kidding me? Not apparently. We know what happened. We had an account that was deleted on us after we had already validated and everything was pushed through. But it just happened. It just happened to happen on the same day that we had some hardware problems that took down several of our servers. So that's why we were 2 or 3 hours late, completely unrelated to this account getting deleted. And they just land on the same day. I was telling one of the programmers when we were talking about it, I said, this is what happens when organizations get bigger. You get these things that don't seem like there's any way that they could be random. And yet, they just feel like some kind of, well, they must be related. But they aren't related. Stuff just happens. Mind you, we have not had a balancing error. Well, the last time we had this kind of balancing error was probably 2 to 3 years ago when this happened again. You know, typically they don't just delete accounts like this. But we had one probably 2 to 3 years ago. Hardware failures, they're pretty rare because the guys do a great job there of monitoring the hardware and making sure everything's fine. And we have a lot of uptime, good uptime. The last time we had any kind of a balancing problem was probably 5 or 6 months ago. So on the same night, we have a hardware failure and a balancing problem, and they're completely unrelated. It's funny stuff. It's just funny stuff. On the writing front, I've gotten some stuff done this week. Not as much as I wanted to. I did get the book finished up, uploaded, Kindle version, Nook version, iBooks version. It's all up. I always get tickled when I upload stuff to the iBooks stuff because, first of all, you have to do it with a Mac. No, we're not going to build a web interface for you to use. You have to do it with a Mac because you're uploading it to iBooks. So the best way to do that must be with a Mac. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But then, you know, you upload it to Kindle, and they're like, great, 12 hours, it'll be up for sale. Okay, great. You upload it to Nook, they're like, great, 24 hours, it'll be ready for sale. You process a physical book from CreateSpace over to Amazon. They're like, great, about a week, everything will be good to go, it'll be ready for sale. Okay, great. You send it to iBooks, and it's like 3 to 4 weeks before it's available for sale. You say what stores you want it to sell on. And then when you actually go there and look at your dashboard, it'll say, so-and-so a book, not available on 12 stores. Oh, thanks. Thank you. Thank you very much, Apple. And you go back day after day after day. Not available on 12 stores. You finally just give up and forget about it. And then like a month goes by and you go, oh, I wonder if that ever actually made it out there. Then finally it gets done. Finally. I don't know. I don't know if they have to sacrifice a chicken to get it done. I don't know what's going on over there. Yeah. So anyways, so I was working on that. I was also, I think I had mentioned before that on this new series I'm going to work on, I want to pair them up with parables, and I initially decided that, excuse me, I would only use the parables that had something about the kingdom of heaven in it, you know, that the kingdom of God is like, or the kingdom of heaven is like. I just don't have enough to make that work. So over the last 3 or 4 days, I got myself an exhaustive list of the parables, and I'm just like I went through all of them, copied down the scriptures, put it into my file that I'm keeping my notes on for Windfall, and you know, now that I have that done, then I need to start turning around and start back into seeing what I can match up with the different books. Start doing my planning. This is going to be interesting. I do have one other little side project that I've got to get finished. I did a little tiny project for another friend, a company in town. They were actually my friends. So, and they had a guy sitting in a basement working 8 hours a day doing monkey work, pecking on a computer. And I made the mistake of saying, you know, in about 5 or 8 hours, I could automate that for you. And so that was 8 years ago. We did have to do an update 3 years after that, about 5 years ago, for a couple of more hours. But that's pretty much been it. And oh, about every 6 months or so, I get a call and they say, we're not sure this is working. And so I go down and flip the switch. And usually it is working. It's, you know, just had a little glitch or something like that. Well, I got another one of those calls and I just decided, you know, it's about time to hand this off. So I'm in the process of finding them another solution, which I think I have. And, you know, we're just going to be working through those details probably some tomorrow. And then I'm going to get back to writing. So this week I saw a TED Talk. And I think maybe this TED Talk resonated with me because I'm coming up on facing the type of decisions that the woman faced in this TED Talk. And she is, I think, a journalist. Her name is Amanda Bennett. And the name of her TED Talk was "We Need a Heroic Narrative for Death." Very touching story. Years ago, she was in Peking. She said it was long enough. It wasn't called ago that it wasn't called Beijing. It was called Peking still then. So that must have been, man's 70s, 80s, sometime in there, 80s maybe. Can't remember when it got renamed Beijing. So she was there and she met someone there at a party and they subsequently got married and it was very cute. If you want to listen to the TED Talk, I'll let you listen to it. She had a lot of really cute stuff. So it's called "We Need a Heroic Narrative for Death" is the name of that. And so they get married. They start traveling around the world. They having kids. You know, she said her husband spoke 6 languages, played 15 instruments, a licensed pilot, had once been a San Francisco cable car operator, expert in swine nutrition, done dairy cattle, Dixieland, film noir. She said, we did travel the country, we did travel the world, and we had lots of kids. And she said, it seemed like there was nothing we couldn't do. And she said, and then there was one day when he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And they began to go through all the normal things that people go through. They had together fought many battles together, and they decided, you know, we're going to do this. And we're going to make this work. And she said, we had this hope, this belief, that we were going to beat it. We were going to figure it out. She said, we had the standard surgery stuff where the surgeon comes out and says, we got it all. And she said, and then there'd be a couple of years where it seemed we were looking up again, and then there would be something else that would come up, and cancer would reappear. And she said, every single time we'd go after it, you know, we'd agree to the aggressive treatments. And she said they had several cycles of this. And she said, and all the time we believed that we were going to beat it. And she said, and so then it comes down to, she said, the time finally comes. There's another dark night sometime between midnight and 2 a.m. This time it's the intensive care ward. And a 20-something resident, never met before, says her husband is dying, perhaps tonight. And then he says, what do you want me to do? And she says, you know, there's a new drug that's out there. It's newer, it's more powerful. Started it just 2 weeks ago. There's still hope. She said, so what do I say? I say, keep him alive if you can. She said, 6 days later, her husband died. And she said if she had it to do all over again, she'd said she'd do it all again without a moment's hesitation. She said of her husband, we fought together, we lived together. It turned out to be, she said it turned what could have been the seven of the most grimmest years of our lives into seven of the most glorious because they were having a battle. She said it was also expensive. She says it's the kind of fight and the kind of choicing that everyone agrees pumps up end-of-life care and health care for all of us. She said what she didn't get a chance to say was, because they never got to the point where they thought it was the end. She said, what I didn't get a chance is what I say every day. She said, hey, buddy, it was a hell of a ride. She said, we never got a chance to say goodbye because we never thought it was the end. We always had hope. And she ended up writing a book called The Cost of Hope. And it sounds like an interesting book. And she was talking about what did she discover. And she said, in her mind, what she discovered is that hope is not some kind of a bug where people can't face reality. She said that hope is, in fact, a feature. That it gets us through those times. It helps us believe. She said, but she does think that in spite of all that, she does think that perhaps she would like to change the focus of that hope, or maybe change how she approached right at the end. She said, because the reason you keep pushing so hard is because we look at death as an end and death ultimately as a failure. And that's why she thinks that we need a new narrative for hope. Because she said, if death is a failure, then obviously you want to help, you want to fix it. You've succeeded in everything you've done, and having a patient die, well, that must feel like failure. And from that, she said, we really need a better way to describe our ending. She said, maybe we need a new story. Not a story about giving up the fight or of hopelessness, but rather a story of victory and triumph, of a valiant battle, and eventually a graceful retreat. A story that acknowledges that not even the greatest general defeats every foe. And she had a really nice quote from a poet that was writing about Mark Antony. The name of the poet, it was a Greek poet named Konstantin Kavafi. Gotta love the writers. And he's writing about Mark Antony when he's facing his final battle and he realizes he's going to lose. And it's a great quote. It's pretty cool. Here's the quote. As if long prepared, this is the writer talking to Mark Antony about how he should close the battle for Alexandria, knowing now that he's going to be defeated, that there's just no, he's never going to win this. As if long prepared, as if courageous, as it becomes you who were worthy of such a city, approach the window with a firm step and with emotion, but not with the entreaties or complaints of a coward. As a last enjoyment, listen to the sounds, the exquisite instruments of the musical troops, and bid her farewell, the Alexandria you are losing. And so, what this woman is proposing is that hope is a wonderful thing, but it's not a feature. It's a bug. It's not a bug. It's not a bug. It's a feature because it helps us and sustains us. But also, we shouldn't let it rob us of really cherishing our loved ones as they pass on. And I guess one of the reasons that I thought, oh, maybe I'll talk about that, is because, you know, it's coming. I can feel it coming. My mom turned 87 this week. My dad is 90. I'm getting my mail. One moment. It's not going to be too long. I mean, the cool thing about where they're at now is they have enjoyed life. They have lived life. They have done well. They still have things to contribute, but they recognize that they are at the end of their run. And they're quite content with that. And they're ready. You know, they still get up every day and move through the day, but they're ready. They know that, you know, the transition is coming. And I think that if there was some kind of major diagnosis, I'm backing into my garage, so I'm going to talk louder. I really think that if there was some kind of major diagnosis of cancer or something like that, that my dad would just say, yeah, no, we're not doing all that expensive treatment. We're just not doing it. And, I mean, he's already said that if he has any indications that he's having a heart attack again, that he's not going into the hospital, that he's just going to play it out. And I think my mom, you know, would be the same way. My mom is built like a horse. She's a Raguso. I got those Raguso genes. She's going to live into her 90s. There's no question about that. But, you know, in facing that, in looking at that, and in listening to this TED Talk, the really cool thing about where my parents are right now is that I truly believe we are going to have a heroic farewell. You know, I truly believe that they are not going to ask for any kind of extraordinary care. That we, as that time approaches, are just going to spend the time that we can together. And then when the moment comes, we're going to say goodbye. Or, actually, I'm going to say, see you on the other side. And there will be tears. You know, it's impossible to not have someone who's been part of your definition and then that ends. It's impossible to not have emotion that goes along with that. But man, both of them have done well. They have loved God. They have loved each other. They love their children. They made positive impacts. So it's going to be good. And I really am grateful that they led me in a path that does already embody a heroic narrative for death. That already embodies a heroic narrative for making the transition. And so, while I know that's coming, I really don't dread it or fear it. I just keep telling my parents, we're going to walk through whatever comes up. Whatever happens, we're walking through it together. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.